time now for Connecting the Diocese. Connecting the Diocese is a production of the Diocese of La Crosse. Here's host Jack Socha.
Thank you so much for tuning in Connecting the Diocese. Normally about this time for 60 seconds or so, I talk about some uplifting story that's going on, and there are plenty of them out there. However, this week, for some reason, I've been thinking of the phrase, the old saying, it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness. Well, as fate would have it, I will be interviewing today the new Director of Communications for the Diocese of La Crosse, who is a big advocate of exactly that kind of thinking and is looking forward to experiencing all the many little candles that are being lit around the Diocese of La Crosse. I think you're going to find this to be a fascinating interview with Eric Archer. Got a lot of things to say and a lot of good thoughts. So we'll be getting to that in just a second or two right here on Connecting the Diocese. Well, before we get going, a little cautionary tale from Jack. And believe me, this is absolutely true firsthand. I could not make up the story if I wanted to. I go to a recycling center almost every week. And one Wednesday I was there, and the gentleman I talked to said, "You probably won't be seeing me here next week. Assuming my wife and I test negative for COVID, we are going to Alaska for a couple of weeks. It's a cruise and a trip we have been planning for years and saving for years. And we just didn't feel safe going during the lockdown, and finally we want to get out and get this going. So if I'm not here next Wednesday, you'll know that I tested negative for COVID and we are in Alaska." Well, a couple of weeks have gone by, and I was there this past Wednesday, and I said, where's so-and-so? I thought he was supposed to be back by now. I wanted to see how his big trip to Alaska was. And they said, "Well, he's in Canada." I said, "What? What is he doing in Canada? I thought he was going to Alaska." He says, "On the trip, on his vacation, somewhere in Alaska, he got COVID. He tested positive, and so he's quarantining in Canada because he cannot leave Canada and come to the USA until he tests negative." I guess some Canadian hotels have a special floor for COVID-19 patients. I don't know how they get food to them or what they do or how the whole thing is, and nor do I have any idea of how much it costs. So anyway, he's up there. I'm hoping by maybe this coming week, maybe he'll be back. And I have no word as to whether his wife got COVID or what she's doing. I guess the cautionary tale is this. It's not over. It's still around you. And if you're going to be anywhere in close proximity to other people in enclosed areas like tour buses, things like that, planes, mask up, be sure to wash your hands and keep those COVID test kits handy. And don't forget, you can go online to check your county levels to see how it is where you happen to live. COVID-19, it's simply not yet a thing of the past. So you be careful out there. Well, as promised, a new voice for our folks here in the Diocese of La Crosse, someone you're going to be hearing a lot from and hopefully a lot about, especially right now, Eric Archer. Eric is the new Director of Communications for the Diocese of La Crosse. Eric, welcome to the team.
Well, Jack, thanks. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the time with you today.
You are not a stranger to La Crosse. You've been living in the area for how many years now?
Well, you know, the Army brought me here, Jack, and we tend to go where the Army tells us to. It brought me here about 4.5 years ago now.
And you have been very active with various Catholic communities in the area. So it's not like you've just been dropped on Main Street and you don't know where to get off the interstate or something like that.
No, yeah. So, you know, we're all, I think, probably different places in our own faith journey. So, you know, there's that. And I learn every day, and I'm blessed to be around experts in the faith as exist across our diocese. But locally, no, I in that role as the professor of military science at UWL, Turbo, St. Mary's in Winona, I got a good chance to meet many of our friends in the media, our community leaders.
Yeah, and you've spent time with Viterbo, and you're familiar with the Servant Leadership Program, and basically you are already experiencing that amazement at how much stuff gets done around here that is really cool, which is nice. It's really wonderful.
Yeah, you know, it's almost what would normally probably be several months of wonder at the strength and power that exists at places just like that, at the Turbo, you know, with Rick Kite and Tom Thibodeau and all things like I have been bathing in that for 4 years. So I get to start with that appreciation versus learn it.
The thing that's going to be nice, because right now one of your jobs is to make the rounds, basically, to talk to the media, to hand out your business cards, to let them know that you're here for them. How can you help? How can the diocese help? What do you want? You know, all the things that basically makes for good communications, which is why you're a communications director. And when I learned that you were going to be going around to various parishes and various places, I said, boy, I'll tell you, this is great for me, because I said, Rick, keep your eyes open for me. if you run across something that hits your hot button that you think is really cool, chances are it will also hit my hot button. And I'm sure it will also hit the bishop's hot button as well. We have spent more time over the years talking about unbelievably good things that average people do. And you're seeing it firsthand. You're just seeing it all the time in your travels as well. You have been here for about 4 years. You've got a family in the area as well. What are your kids' ages now again?
Well, so Jack, to your first point, I'll tell you that the amount of things happening across the diocese is just unbelievable. So I'm thankful for programs like this that help advertise that. And really, I see our role here in the communications office is amplifying those things. You know, we serve the parishes that are on the front edge of the faith. And I can't wait to tell those stories and to amplify them. I myself have three kiddos. I have a 14-year-old boy who just finished cross-country practice and texted me that his legs are on fire. I got a 12-year-old girl who's about ready to turn 13, and she's excited to be done with 12s. I think most girls are. And then I've got a 9-year-old who we named after the town where his great-grandparents met in North Dakota, and he's just a ball of fire and love. So it's
Gosh, that sounds good. Well, maybe someday we'll have to have him on to talk about what their lives are like these days as well. You know, we have had people on from, the youth ministry is now the youth and adult ministry, and Chris from that department. His kids have grown up over the past 10 years. I mean, it's really funny. I've talked to him from Christmases ago about what Christmas presents they were getting when they were little kids, and now they're going to college. I mean, it's just a wonderful thing. We've got a kind of a family environment here. Each of these departments that is in the Diocese of La Crosse working for all of the parishes have been around for quite some time, and they're so sincere. And I think the other thing is that as we reach out to other parishes, and the people are sincere in all kinds of things they're doing on the local level. And they may not think that what they're doing would be of any interest to anybody else, but you would be amazing and surprised at how interested other people are in the good, neat stuff people are doing, even if it's a little thing. They go, wow, that really is cool.
Yeah, you know, I think of it sometimes as puzzle pieces. You know, everyone's got a one or two or three puzzle pieces, and when we sit down together, you know, at the table and put them together, something really incredible emerges. And corporal acts of mercy are something that I think transcend faith traditions. And there are, having sat in that meeting with Chris and the leaders across the diocese that are doing different social justice efforts, we are feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, housing the homeless in force. And that is a story I look forward to sharing.
And for those of you who are not familiar with that term, the corporal acts of mercy, he just described what they are, which is great. Yeah, it's so basic to humanity. I mean, whether you're Catholic or not Catholic, you want to feed the hungry. You want to house the homeless. You want to take care of people who are sick, who are in need. And we have been through some pretty rough times these past couple of years. There's people who have been going along in their life, and their life has been disrupted either through illness or lack of employment or all the things that are going on right now.
Yeah, you know, and my sense, Jack, is in that empathy for others and in that understanding that you just mentioned is the connection that like binds us to each other as people. And it's a heartening and renewing thing. I told my spiritual director yesterday that in the past 2 weeks, I've had more eye-watering, like shaking moments than I've had in my whole life. And that's just from being around folks that are so committed to the faith and to helping others. And in our community, as you mentioned, how blessed are we that we have like an organization like Habitat for Humanity, the YMCA. On the way in today, I drove by one of their mobile vehicles that provides food to those that need it. There's just so much happening in that lane of corporal acts of mercy that it inspires me every day.
And our Catholic organizations are working in harmony with other faiths and also, you know, basically secular organizations. So it's not unusual that you'll hear that Roberto Parteru is talking about, you know, the school supplies giveaway that he's doing in concert with, you know, you name the other organization, Salvation Army, whoever it happens to be. And also the other faiths as well. We had a delightful show several years ago. We had to do something again like this in person, though, not over the internet. I mean, Bishop Callahan was on with the bishop of the ELCA Lutherans and also a local rabbi who was about to retire. And it was so much fun to see these three guys chatting and laughing and comparing and really having so many things in common and working together for the benefit of everybody. These things are just the kind of thing that makes this area very, very special and very unique, because we see this stuff happening all the time around here.
No, you're exactly right. And I think probably what we see in those three individuals is the grace and love of God active. And that's, you know, differently expressed in each person, but that is incredible. And related to this, yesterday's reading was about the 99 sheep and the one. And for me as a communicator and a storyteller, which is one of, I think, my job descriptions here in this role, now that story really resonates. And that's kind of what we're talking about, is like our mandate and our Lord like leaves the 99 sheep to find the one that is lost. And by doing that, you know, we're Christ-like. And, you know, the realization for me some time ago is that we're all the one. We're all that sheep, that one that he looks for and finds such great joy in finding. I think the minute we think that we're in the 99 and that we're secure and we're in that pen and we don't need to worry about the one sheep, we maybe lost our way a little bit. So I love the idea of telling the story of the one and then the hundreds and thousands of people across the diocese that are looking for that one to bring them back in.
One of the words that, or one of the lines, I should say, that Bishop used some years ago that hit me really hard, and over the years I've just not forgotten. He simply said, no one is disposable, whether it be an infirmity or whether it be old age or whether it be whatever the situation is. You know, maybe they have fallen into a drug addiction or whatever the case, or mental illness or who knows what, crime. No one is disposable.
That's incredible, Jack. Like it's so meaningful, I think, what we do every day. You know, one of the things he mentioned when I took the job is that the Army was a earth-shattering business, but what we do here in the diocese is soul-shattering. And I had goosebumps when he said that. Like, this is a matter of saving souls. That love and that matter of disposability. You know, yesterday Cardinal Hollerich was in town, and his homily, he talked about when he was in Italy, he met with a murderer at a prison. All the prisoner asked was for him to meet with his mother. So Cardinal Hollerich then did that and went to travel and visited her, and she... Italian hospitality. She had cake and coffee, and then all she could talk about was how much she loved her son and all the amazing things he did throughout his life and how full of love he was and how incredible he was. And the Cardinal was taken aback a little bit, because here they were talking about somebody who had taken the life of another human. And he realized that's how God sees us, as that mother sees her son, is how Jesus sees each one of us. And I am so very blessed in this role to be around so many people that see the beloved of God in other people versus somebody to judge or somebody who's less than. And that's just so prevalent here. Again, I just feel so incredibly blessed to be around such a team.
We don't get a lot of feedback, phone calls or whatever. We do have you can write us by writing to connecting@diolc.org. And I do urge anyone who's got something going on or a question or comment or suggestion to do that. But a while back, we had on a group of people who work with people who are addicted to drugs. And we were talking about, for example, they said when a person is getting off drugs and is fighting addiction, they have to find something to fill their time. Because before, all they were thinking about is where they were going to get the next hit. Mm-hmm. And they also got to have different friends than they had before. We're talking about this in a very human way, as you were just doing it. And I had a mom call up. I don't know how she got my home phone number, but she did, and left a message saying, thank you so much. My son is an addict, and you never hear them being talked about as if they're people. And you guys were talking about them like he was a real person. Boy, I sat there going, yes, that's good. It takes a lot of grit. And this is in the Gospels, to look at these people and say, no. You're not this wretched cast off. You're one step different than me, you know, basically. I mean, you can look at a homeless person and go, oh my God. The next thing, you could have a fire in your house or something, or you lose your job and miss a mortgage payment or you whatever, and you'll be in exactly the same position.
You know, by for the grace of God, there go I. And then, I mean, you're absolutely right. I agree 100%.
Yeah. I was thinking this week about, you know, normally for the minute introduction I do, basically I try to find something good that's happened either in the area or outside the area. And this week, for some reason, I kept thinking about this phrase, it's better to light a single candle than to curse the darkness. And it sounds to me like you are trying to locate all those candles that have been lit around our diocese.
Yeah, that's a great analogy, Jack. And frankly, my candle has been lit by others, right? So the idea of casting light, I think, is something, and you know, it's something for all of us to ask, I guess, in our lives. Are we casting light or are we casting darkness? And you mentioned a minute ago, interacting with other people, and something I heard very recently was just remembering every time we engage with somebody, we're engaging with one of God's beloved. And no matter what we think of that person, the frustration, doing away with the judgment and remembering that they too are God's beloved. Should their beliefs be different, their ideas be different, they are God's beloved, and there's so much light and love in the diocese. The idea that I get to kind of hold up a microphone to that, with great people like you, share that, it's I'm surprised I get paid. It's a phenomenal job. I'm blessed.
Yeah, that's a good, I'm surprised I get paid. That's good. You know, also that we try to reach out in a way that there are a lot of people, especially ones who are like out of high school or go into college or into work or the military, as I did, as you did as well. There's this period of time that hits you sometime after you're, say, 18 or 19 and before maybe you get a bit older, where you tend to kind of, in many cases, throw away stuff you learned in your religion. And then you come back later on. Try to attract people to give a second thought about their inner spiritual life. One of the nicest shows we did, and I periodically replayed parts of it, was Bishop Callahan just explaining to people, how do you start a prayer life? It isn't as complicated as you think. Because there are people who would like to kind of get back closer to understanding their relationship to God. They don't know how to begin. And I'm sure you'll be finding people, and by golly, when you do, let me know and we'll get them on as well, who will be more than happy to explain a bit more how to get into that kind of a thing.
No, that's a great point, Jack. And then what I would tell people, you know, kind of related to what you just mentioned is, you know, Bishop Barron at his installation talked about the statistic that's sobering. You know, 50% of, more than 50% of young Catholics that leave when they leave their family, they leave the church. As well. He quoted Benedict in that the church only ever does three things. It worships God, it helps the poor, and it evangelizes. And I would challenge any one of us to disagree with that. And frankly, most churches of different faiths, I think, would agree with that. So, I think one of my charges here and for everybody listening is we need to evangelize, and especially towards, you know, the younger segment of our population. We have in the past taken for granted almost that hero's journey, that faith's journey of, you know, we're going to fall away from the faith and then we'll come back later. I would challenge that assumption for us. And really, you know, so my heart rests with those youth ministers that are across the diocese right now, folks at the Newman Centers that are in focus groups that are trying to build really vibrant faith traditions in our younger groups. That's where all of us, I think, maybe need to look right now for our faith.
Yeah, it's really, really important, because if you don't have some kind of grounding in your faith, if you throw it out, it leaves a hole and something will fill that hole. And it may not be something that's good. I was reading in, I don't know, Wired magazine or one of those techie magazines, that an increasing number of young people who have basically dropped out of religion as far as a formal thing are throwing all their efforts into work, into some new .com opens up with a new app that's going to change the world. And they go after perfecting this app that's going to change the world with the fervor of a person who is trying to change the world through understanding God and faith. And what happens is that, like so many other apps, when the company fails, when the app doesn't change the world or they go bankrupt, these people feel betrayed. And it's kind of like, what are you people doing? I mean, your youthful desire to do good is wonderful, but that's not really the best way of doing it.
Yeah, you know, it begs the question, what do we worship? And, you know, the splinter and the beam, like, I'm certainly not judging, because I, you know, by the grace of God, there go I. I worked at the Pentagon, you know, for 3 years, and my marriage suffered, and I worked long hours. I left before daybreak, and I came home after sunset, so there was many days. I worked in a windowless the basement of the Pentagon, so there was many days where I saw no sunlight. And those things are of the earth, so they pass, but our Lord transcends all. So I think there's fear sometimes people have, maybe, in the idea that they would turn over that drive and that joy and that love to Christ and to our faith. But I would say, man, there's not fear in that. There's joy and love in trusting our God so much that you turn your life over to Him to handle, and to know that He has got you as that one sheep. It's an absolutely incredible feeling. And I would tell folks, you know, our young listeners and all our listeners, we all struggle with this, is that it's dangerous to worship on the altar of work, because I have in my own career seen many, many people sacrifice families, sacrifice health, sacrifice an unhealthy amount of things on the altar of work. And that, you know, when I was a young Army officer, we had a chaplain talk to us, and chaplains are sources of wisdom. We talked about rubber balls and crystal balls, and that, you know, got our attention. Okay, what's this going to be about? And the chaplain decided to ask us about the crystal ball of family and the rubber ball of career. And he asked us to name, in our mind, what were some crystal balls? So, you know, somebody raised their hand and said family, and the chaplain agreed, absolutely. You know, family's a crystal ball. If you were to drop that, it would take years and decades to repair, and you may never do it, and your hands will get cut up. Well, you'll bleed trying to fix that ball. And then somebody else mentioned faith, and the chaplain said, absolutely, I love that. As a chaplain, I love that we called out faith as a crystal ball. And then somebody else said career, and the chaplain said, you know, so many people think that career is a crystal ball, but it's a rubber ball. Everyone in this room, if worse came to worse, could find a job whether it be at McDonald's or whether it be at, you know, at place X, you'll be employed. It could be skinny, but you'll make it. God will provide. So many people drop the crystal ball of family and of faith for the rubber ball of career, and that's never left me. So I kind of foot stomp that here and now, just because it is a lesson hard learned that I think many of my peers at my age wish they could go back and share that our Lord, our faith, and our family are the crystal balls, and too many of us confuse them for career.
You know, you mentioned you were serving in Afghanistan. What kind of position were you in there?
Well, so I deployed four times. I was in Iraq in 04 as a platoon leader, or as an executive officer, and I served as a platoon leader twice, once when a platoon leader was killed in action and another when a platoon leader was relieved for cause. I deployed again just a year later and served as a logistics officer. I deployed a few years later to Afghanistan, and I was a police mentor in Kabul, and I deployed again the following year, and I ran a forensics lab, actually, for Marines in Helmand province. And so working with Marines was incredible. And then and that kind of scientific job was a really good one.
That's deployed four times.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's a lot of deployments.
A fraction of the deployments that many of my friends and those in the military have had. And I was very lucky that they weren't all very kinetic. It was a great experience.
We were kind of laughing before the show because both of us have served 3 years or thereabouts in the Pentagon. The only difference is 50 years apart. I'm sure when you were there, everything had computers and this, that, and the other, and display screens. When I was there, it was IBM Selectric typewriters and Xerox 914s. And that was it. You know, we didn't have cell phones. We actually, I'm going to talk, this is just how communications changes over the decades. We didn't have satellite communications. We didn't have sat phones and all this stuff. We had underground cables. And so when something really, really big was happening, for example, back in, 1967 or 8, the North Koreans snatched the Pueblo, a Navy, basically a spy ship. We had to have signs up in this communications office in the Pentagon saying, minimize, don't use communications unless you have to, so the important stuff can get through. During the same thing with the 67 Arab-Israeli war, it was kind of like, cut the nonsense stuff out, cut the unimportant stuff out, so that the important stuff can get through. And there are days when I'm working and I'm trying to get something done, when I have important stuff to do and I keep getting distractions, and I go, minimize, cut the important stuff. And, you know, and also, this sounds, I'm going to bring it back to Gospels again, minimize. So I'll tell you, if you're reading all these self-help books and all these crazy ideas about, you know, which person in the family chain, where you know the birth order and all these things, if you don't take a look at some of the basic stories and the basic sayings and the basic teachings that are right there in plain English that will help you live better in the Bible, you're missing out. And I must admit, I have not been a big, huge Bible reader most of my life. But lately, I've been looking at this going, you know, there are answers here. I'm looking at these problems going on, and I'm going, minimize, knock out all the excess chatter. Look at this for a minute. This is really good.
No, Jack, that's brilliant. You know, we all have a limited bandwidth, and what we choose to spend it on is a deliberate choice, even if we don't recognize it as such. And you know, what's really resonated with me over the past months is the Ignatian way of listening. So, you know, we seek out and digest information with screens and, you know, books, and I love all those things. But I'll tell you, when I go on a run and I get in that little groove, like when the needle finds the groove of the record and everything's in place, my body and my soul listen and I hear. And so for me, it's almost challenging the status quo of seeking out that knowledge and that digital feedback and finding feedback within stillness. And I think there's a real utility in having that be one of the many ways which we seek for knowledge.
You mentioned chaplains, and I must admit, I am very proud of military chaplains. They do an awful lot of work. I spent most of my youth in youth groups and church. I mean, all the way through 18. 6 days out of high school, I'm in the Army. And then after basic training and intelligence school and all this stuff, I'm working at the Pentagon, and I'm living at this military base, which is right next to the Pentagon. And the way it was set up was that If you wanted to be an enlisted man and go to the enlisted man's club and drink beer, you could do that. If you wanted to go to a movie, you could do that. If you wanted to hop a bus, you could be in D.C. in a matter of minutes. And there was all kinds of things over there going on. But there was no place to do nothing. And so I got a hold of the base chaplain. And they had a rec center kind of there. And I said, can you make a coffee house kind of thing where we can just meet and talk? And he did. And that became a real anchor for both my faith and also keeping me out of trouble, basically, and with meeting like-minded people. And it was nice. We would show movies and we would have discussion groups, and he wasn't very intrusive. Every once in a while, he would come in and say, now a word from our sponsor. You know, we do have services on Sunday. a major Benjamin Britten was his name. Absolutely remarkable influence to keep me happy and basically normal during a time of great upheaval back in the 60s. So these chaplains are the rubber ball, crystal ball thing. These are things that stick with you. That's really neat that you're so tuned into those.
No, Jack, you think about that, Jack. So that interaction he had with you, you remember his name still now, because it was that meaningful. And that one chaplain probably had that conversation, a version of that, 100 times, 1,000 chaplains, like the amount of God's work being done by chaplains. And then they see the worst, you know, in our military, we charge them to family life counseling, bereavement, you know, financial stress. Like they every day are dealing with soldiers in absolute crisis. And for them, the resilience they have is truly absolutely inspiring. And then I tell you, I love my job of telling the story of our diocese. If folks haven't met Father Conrad Targonsky at Viterbo, you know, he was a Navy chaplain for, gosh, I think almost 30 years. And he worked with the Marines, served with them in the Battle of Fallujah. So, you know, for a chaplain on the garrison side, when we're here, there's a lot of those things I just mentioned in terms of, you know, family life counseling and marriage treats. But when we deploy and we're in harm's way, you know, chaplains will administer last rites. And those types of deaths aren't as they're portrayed in the movies. They're very difficult. And so Chaplain Targonsky, you know, did that for several deployments, and he is a man of such deep faith, power, and humility. And what he's done for our country, our service members, and our God is absolutely incredible as a chaplain and as a person. So if anyone listening gets a chance to shake Father Conrad Targonsky's hand from Viterbo, it'll be well worth your time.
Yeah. We had him on, a number of months ago now, and we do have the last 100 shows archived, and it would be possible to go find that if you want to hear that. It's an MP3 file that you can play. You should get it back on again. I tend to do some special shows around Veterans Day and certainly on Memorial Day as well. But Father is he's really something to behold. These guys, you listen to them and what they've done, it's just remarkable that they are able to do all these things. And like you say, it gets amplified and amplified. And also, these chaplains do the most mundane stuff. I was talking to another chaplain years ago, one of our senior priests who had been an Air Force chaplain. And you know, one of the things that happens to a lot of single guys in the military. I was one. I was only 18, 19 years old. It's amazing the number of guys who get Dear John letters while they're in the military from their girlfriend back home. And these chaplains, you know, have to console them about this. I remember I was working 6 to midnight at the Pentagon, and I go back to my barracks to go to bed because I'm tired. And here's this guy from Texas. His name was Lyle. And he obviously had a number of beers, and he was standing in the barracks with his hand on the telephone booth, basically to keep from getting dizzy. And he just goes, "Don't touch me. I can't move." And I go, "Lyle, what happened?" He says, "My girlfriend dumped me." You know? And I had the same thing happen, you know, later on. But you know, it isn't all major crisis. Of course, when you're 19 and your girlfriend back home dumps you for somebody else, it's a major crisis. But these chaplains have this whole spectrum of stuff that they deal with.
It's just, Jack, you're right. You know, in deployments, you know, we're all too familiar with this, unfortunately, but we would redeploy, and there's a beautiful ceremony on the installation, flags and families and you know, husbands and wives of loved ones that have been waiting at home for a year, and and beautiful children with, you know, hair and pigtails and sundresses, eager to see mom or dad. There would be times every time we redeployed where there would be a soldier who would not have somebody there that expected somebody there. Their husband or wife, boyfriend or girlfriend left them without telling them, and they just sat alone while everyone else had these really raw emotional reunions. And there would be a chaplain that would have to pick those pieces up. And then that's the everyday life of a chaplain. So I just have such deep respect for those men that do that, because it is a calling.
And the priests of our diocese are have to be masters at this kind of thing. You know, I've often said that the average priest has to do so many things that the CEO of a corporation wouldn't know how to do. They have to handle committee meetings. They have to handle people's personal affairs, people's spiritual affairs. If the roof is leaking, they got to figure out what to do with that as well. You know, things that the CEO would just pick a, you know, push a button on a phone and say, get maintenance over here. Well, you know, in many cases, Father so-and-so is maintenance. And so the spectrum of what they do is remarkable. There's not that many people, but some people just always think that, well, they come out every Sunday and say a few things and they go back inside. No. The work they do, and also our deacons, our religious, a lot of stuff goes on. The other thing that comes up a lot that we talk about, especially when we're talking with folks at Catholic Charities and elsewhere, is the remarkable amount of time that the average volunteer puts in helping at a church, whether it's cleaning the pews before Easter or just helping out with a bake sale or the, you know, the famous breakfasts that go on, things like that. There's going to be a big event September 11th at the cathedral for the rededication, and there's going to be a party outside, and there's going to be food and the music, and I can guarantee you there's going to be a whole bunch of volunteers helping out. And so these people are almost unsung. The people at Catholic Charities who work over at the warming centers and things like that, just everywhere, just remarkable. And it has been a bit of a strain because of COVID, because in many cases, a lot of these people are retired and they didn't want to get anybody sick. And so there's been a drop in volunteerism. But if you are a young, healthy person who wants to spend a little time volunteering, you'll get a lot out of it. Tons of things out of it.
Yeah, I know you're right, Jack. I think, you know, we're back. Like, we look forward to these types of celebrations. And the one you mentioned on September 11th outside the cathedral is going to be beautiful. And you're absolutely right. The amount of man hours underneath something like that to make it happen is incredible. And all the work that Monsignor Gillis is doing, unheralded and unknown, but by gosh, that's going to be an incredible event, you know, much, you know, due to his shepherding. And that kind of thing happens every day across the diocese, absolutely.
I have to ask you kind of an odd question. What is the most interesting or strangest thing that you encountered in your 3 years at the Pentagon? Any, was there any moment there when something happened that you went, whoa, isn't this interesting?
As you would know, the story's there. So, you know, I worked in the basement, and, you know, so on the one hand, I would tell you the decor when you left and when I left are the same. Like, nothing has changed. We would move. There was one time where we moved pictures that were hung on the wall for whatever reason, and underneath the pictures, the walls were white. And until then, we didn't realize that they were all stained yellow from the halogen lights that just were always on. And we left work feeling a little sick that day. But the best stories are always from the Pentagon Athletic Center, where there's just a really wide variety of how folks appreciate and approach fitness, and then their conduct in the locker room, and their comfort with, like, levels of proximity to other people. You know, you go into the Pentagon Athletic Center, and every day was a bit of an adventure. Some folks would be shadow boxing with weights, and it was just always something. We would come back from the pack and kind of convene. Okay, how'd it go for you today? Did you see this? Did you see that? But in those types of conversations are bonding and camaraderie. So really, I'll tell you, the Pentagon was an absolutely incredible time. I was served among the best people in the military, and I kind of got to just be a player on that team, and that was amazing.
Now, I was an enlisted guy, so I didn't have the same access to some of the things that you probably did. I do agree with you, though, that some of the people that I worked with were pretty darn sharp. They had to be. The other thing was also, I love the fact that the U.S. government and the Army trusted me. They said, and I believe this is true, that in an average 8-hour shift, I worked for the communications for the chief of staff of the Army. We handled everything the Army sent. We saw more very classified material in one shift than the average career officer in the Army saw in their lifetime. And they didn't search us. They didn't do it. They trusted we were not going to, you know, break bad and do something stupid. But what was amazing was that at the time, we had, just like in the old newsrooms and you see in the movies, the teletype machines going chakada, 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 grinding out stuff, and bells would go off because it was something important and this, that, and the other. I was working my first Christmas Eve, 4 to midnight. I was the first time away from home. And I tell the story at Christmas time. Bishop loves me telling the story. I'm going to tell it to you now because you're probably the only one, Eric, who hasn't heard this story. Everyone else in the audience is going, "Oh, come on, hold it for Christmas, Jack. Come on, stop it." No, seriously, I'm sitting there, a young guy, homesick as heck, Christmas Eve, and these machines are clackety clackety. As Christmas Eve developed into Christmas Eve, slowly, they all became quiet, and the whole Christian world stopped. They just stopped. And we're just sitting there. Every once in a while, there'd be one. General so-and-so says Christmas greetings to General so-and-so. That was it. And I sat there going, this is all because of Christmas. And what is Christmas about? This is one life. And you always hear that story about, one solitary life. That here I'm at the pinnacle of communications for the Army in the Pentagon, and it stopped dead. It just stopped. Everywhere you went, people were just trying to make Christmas. It was a remarkable experience.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, and I think, Jack, the cool thing about the Pentagon and places like that are those stories are just abounds. I think the great point you made about the creative freedom you have is a lot of, there's an impression people maybe have about the military that it's rigid and orders-based, and certainly there's times where it is. But the Army that I left, it's flat, it's creative, there's initiative. Good bosses will say, hey, here's this thing I want to do, and kind of leave you to figure out how to do it and how to get there. And that allows such creative freedom and growth, and that's the Army I know. And then you mentioned stories. I'd forgotten this one just really quick, but I was running at the Pentagon. You get to run through the National Mall every day for just a 3-mile run. The president happened to be coming to the Pentagon at that time for a briefing from the Secretary of Defense. I just happened to be running across one of the bridges when his motorcade came by. And so all the roads were blocked off, but there wasn't any Secret Service agents, I guess, looking for pedestrians crossing the bridge at that time, because most don't. So I just happened to be like 5 feet away from the presidential motorcade by myself. Like nobody, there was no other runners, there was no other helicopters overhead. And it was just this great moment of appreciation that our commander in chief is crossing the river to, take a briefing from the Secretary of Defense. And I, just this little soldier who's trying to help those efforts, am here and a part of it. It was just awesome to be part of the good happening there.
My first December in Washington, D.C. was, I wanted to go see the lighting of the White House Christmas tree.
Yeah.
Which I did. I made the mistake. I didn't have any other clothes to put on, basically. I mean, I had something, but the Army had these really nice overcoats. So I wore my uniform. And the problem was that when they played Hail to the Chief, you're supposed to stand there saluting.
Sure.
After the ceremony was over, it took a really, really, really long time for the president to get out because he was shaking hands with me. They must have played Hail with the Chief for about 25 minutes.
That's hilarious.
And I'm standing there going, can I put my hand down now? I can't feel my fingers anymore. This is very strange. I didn't know what to do, but it was very, very next year I went, I wore civilian clothes, but it was just great. Yeah, these were remarkable opportunities. And, not everybody gets to see these interesting peak moments. And in your case, and in my case, in many ways, we were both flies on the wall looking at something much bigger than we are. Mm-hmm. And I think that our position here, you as communications director and me working the radio show here, we get to be flies on the wall of something much bigger in the diocese. And what I'm sincerely hoping is that we can pass on that excitement that we have to the people who are listening, to people who are viewing the videos that go on, because we're seeing something from a high pinnacle, because that's not my status. I'm the fly on the wall guy on the side, but we're seeing all this go on, and I'm excited about it, and I know I can just hear it. You're excited about this. I'm sincerely hoping that people who are listening and who go to YouTube and go to the Diocese of La Crosse website and take a look at the online courses that you can take for free through your parish, that you catch this excitement. because there's a lot of stuff going on. There's just a tremendous amount of stuff going on. And really looking forward to basically sharing some time with you about this. And also, like I say, if you can kind of bird dog me a little bit and point out things, that's really good. But we won't tell any more Army stories for the time being. So your next move this week, you're going to be visiting some parishes around the diocese. And I think I mentioned last week that the joke here, as far back as I can remember when Bishop Listecki was here, he would ask his driver, how long does it take to get to, and fill in the blank, you know, Marshfield, Pittsfield, Menominee, whatever. They'd say, oh, about 2 hours. It doesn't matter where it was. It's 15,000 square miles, for those of you who are listening outside the diocese. And it is tremendous fun in the winter. Boy, I'll tell you, I've there's days when I've heard Bishop Callahan went somewhere, and I kind of went, you did actually do that, huh? You drove.
Yeah, you know, okay. He said a fascinating thing last week. He was mentioning that one of the very many beautiful things about our diocese is that his travels allow him, you know, between point A and point B, he gets to bear witness to the beauty of our landscape and the hand of God in our everyday life and in the area in which we live. So he arrives at every location centered very much in the faith just by virtue of our Driftless region's beauty. And I thought that was such an amazing observation, and one, you know, I've taken with me too. I would, as a bumper sticker, Jack, and to your point, you know, we in the diocese all serve parishes and parishioners. You know, that's a good Army thing. Higher always serves lower from a headquarters point of view. So anyone listening, my bumper sticker would be is, you know, we serve you, help us be fishers of men, and then share the good news. You know, my email address is, and please, it's earcher, earcher, at diolc.org. And anyone that's seeing good things happen across the diocese, send me a note. And I think my calling is to amplify and share that good news to help us be fishers of men. And to your point about bird dogging, I think we're all asking the same folks, and those are the folks on faith's front line to share the good things happening.
Yeah, and earcher.
Yep, earcher at diolc.org. That's right. Me.
Yeah, and I think also if people do write to connecting@diolc.org, you will get a copy of that before I even see it, because you'll have to forward it to me, frankly, is how that works. Since I am not a courier staff person, I do not have a diolc.org address. So anything that gets sent to the radio station or to you or, you know, what, or to the connecting address, you get it, and then you'll pop it over to my direction. And it's just a great thing. So you basically are going to be running around. Do you have any agenda as to which towns you're going to be going to this coming week at all?
Well, so Jack, you know, this week is WXOW meeting with a really talented gentleman from St. Pat's. And this week, you mentioned earlier the bishop working with our Lutheran and Jewish partners, and I have a meeting with my counterparts there this week as well to strengthen our interfaith partnerships. And then Friday I'm heading to the Archdiocese to kind of meet my counterpart there. And then I kind of envision it as concentric circles. So once I've made all those relationships and partnerships, I can't wait to get out of the parishes. I was at Holy Trinity yesterday, and such a beautiful, beautiful church. So frankly, it's selfish. I get a chance to meet these people that are on fire with faith and see our beautiful facilities. Again, I'm just so blessed.
Yeah. And you get to see a lot of neat people. And I would be very happy. I mean, and again, this is not my choice because this is not my show. It's the bishop's show. But it seems like the bishop has always had a perfectly fine feeling about any interfaith cooperation that goes on. We all can get along. And there's so much work that needs to be done. There's so much heavy lifting that needs to be done. I'm particularly personally concerned about people who are unsheltered, as Roberto says it. We got cold weather coming up pretty soon. And it's going to be very, very challenging to try to find it with all of the lack of low-cost housing. And also, just feeding people. You know, the prices have gone up on everything, some people, it's a choice between, you know, paying some rent and buying something halfway nutritious to eat. So we have to focus on these things. The back-to-school stuff sounds pretty much under control right now. They've had their program to get a lot of school supplies to kids, and, it's important for that, too. You say, well, how come we're doing that? Well, if you're a kid who's like in 7th grade or 8th grade or 6th grade, whatever, everyone else has got a new backpack and got all that stuff, and you don't. You have a brown paper bag. It doesn't help. And so by giving them the stuff that they can feel like they've got the pens and the stuff they need, it makes them feel better about themselves and makes the whole thing work nicer. And it's just a nice thing to do. And apparently people are resonating with that because there's an awful lot of backpacks getting given away and a lot of school supplies going on all over the place.
Yeah, Catholic Charities. I couldn't be more impressed. You know, my wife, Beth, runs the Afghan resettlement mission for them. So I'm biased in that respect. But they are, you know, in a lot of respects, the action arm of diocese in terms of the amazing good they do. They're working with Chalice of Mercy now. And if any, you know, folks listening want to do one great thing today, Chalice of Mercy, they're on Facebook, if you Google them, Valentina runs that, and it's aid for, you know, Ukrainians that are in life threatening harm's way right now. Just absolutely incredible stuff. And Catholic Charities does those things every single day. So yeah, an absolutely amazing organization.
Yeah, we do a thing every year just before April 15th, where it becomes on April 15th, usually, unless there's a COVID extension. If you haven't paid your power bill, they can turn off your lights. And we do a big thing ahead of time to try to, number one, get money to help people who are way behind on getting their power taken care of. And number two, to tell people who are in that situation, don't be ashamed, contact Catholic Charities. One year, I knew a guy who was, he had served in Desert Storm. I mean, he was tough combat guy. And his son, now years later, was serving in Iraq, and he hadn't been able to contact him. And he was just, he was distraught, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. Part of his, you know, being distraught, he was holding down a job and stuff, but he got behind on details, like paying his power bill. Mm-hmm. And he called me up one day, and here's a tough guy. He's practically in tears. He goes, you know, I haven't heard from my kid in serving over there, and my power is cut off. I don't know what to do. I have to shower in a neighbor's apartment every day. I said, would you call Catholic Charities? And he did. And they got the power back on. They set up a payment plan and they helped out. But, you know, it can happen to anybody. And it's just to hear these stories. And this guy, you know, like I say, this guy, man, you know, you got somebody you want to have watch your back. This would be one of them. But every once in a while, you just hit a point. The little straw breaks the camel's back. And he just didn't know what to do. People can get flummoxed. And when they do, the people like Catholic Charity, people like your local parish priest, they can help you unflummox. They can sort it out a little bit and say, let's look at this in an organized fashion and do this first. And there's a lot of that that goes on around here. And you're going to be, if you think you've seen some now, Eric, boy, you've only seen the tip of the iceberg.
Jack, by the grace of God, there go I. You know, that tough gentleman, you know, for many of us, that facade, that exterior is carefully cultivated. And underneath that is the vulnerability in all of us and that authentic, you know, need in all of us. And that's so blessed that Catholic Charities ministers and tends to that. And then you're right. Like I know when you send your kids back to school and they fall asleep at like 6 p.m. that first week after summer, you know, that was me last week, just processing all the amazing things happening. And, you know, I've had a robust Army career, so I'd like to think that I'm very mentally resilient. But holy cow, last week, just being around the diocese, around its people, and around its priests and its parishes, I am just—it's not me exaggerating. I'm just blown away with the love that is across our diocese.
I understand exactly what you're saying. Blown away with the love—that's exactly what it is. Eric Archer is the new Director of Communications for the Diocese of La Crosse, and I hope that you listening share as much excitement about him being here as I do. I'm just pleased, and I'm sure that we're going to have some pretty neat programming coming up in the future. Plus, we're going to be reaching people in all the different media that we have, in print, the video, you name it. We've got all these different things we do to try to match up with the needs of people, how they receive the good news that we're trying to put out. So, Eric, any final comments before we head out today?
No, Jack, thank you for the time today. I appreciate what you do, and for all those listening, I'm eager to serve you. So, thank you.
All right, very good. We'll talk to you again.
All right, thanks, Jack.
You know, in our conversation with Eric, we're talking about watching out for your neighbors who have fallen on hard times for whatever reason. And most of us think it can't possibly happen to us. And for most of us, we do get by. But there are times with inflation going on where suddenly you realize that your income and your outgo are not matching up. And it can incrementally work against you as fees pile up, interest rates pile up, things like that. So if you know somebody who is in a situation where they have to decide between paying the power bill or paying the rent or buying food or dealing with things like that, please ask them to contact Catholic Charities, because Catholic Charities can do some financial counseling where they can help you plan your payments and maybe talk to the different companies and get something going so you don't find yourself in a pickle. It is nothing to be ashamed of. There are plenty of reasons why it is going on right now, not the least of which is increasing rents that come out of the blue, skyrocketing prices of gasoline. They're dropping a little bit now, but they're still pretty high. And of course, increased prices of food. So if you're finding yourself hurting financially, there's no charge for this. Don't fall for these things you hear on commercial radio where they go, "We can stop your debt." And by all means, avoid payday loans, avoid car title loans. It's a trap. Let Catholic Charities work with you for free, with kindness in their hearts, to help you dig yourself out. And believe me, they've done it before. They can do it again. You do not have to be Catholic to be served by Catholic Charities. It will work with anyone. You do have to get your paperwork in order. Get some copies of your bills, get some copies of your pay stubs, so they can sit down with you and they can put everything in a row so they can see what you got going out, what you got coming in, and what they can do about it. Without that information, there's not much they can do because they haven't got any numbers. And don't forget to include power bills, phone bills, cell phone bills, internet bills, anything that you can think of. It will all help. Go to ccclse.org or simply look up Catholic Charities in your area and give them a call. Jack Socia here with you on Connecting the Diocese. You know, in the past 2 weeks or so, we lost a couple of major voices in the entertainment world. One of them, of course, was Olivia Newton-John. And from a couple of decades earlier than that, Judith Durham from a group called The Seekers. Now, of course, Olivia Newton-John was very famous for a lot of pop songs, many of them from movies. We had, of course, Grease and Xanadu. She did a lot of so-called cover versions of other pop songs, including at one time even Jailhouse Rock, if you can imagine that. She also sang some of what might be considered country tunes, and one that I ended up playing at some station for some reason a great deal, because it was on the playlist. It was called Have You Never Been Mellow? I never fully got the term mellow. I know that Donovan Leitch back in the early middle 60s had a song called Mellow Yellow, but for some reason the term mellow didn't really catch on real hard in the American vernacular. Regardless of that, Olivia Newton-John has a lot of dedicated followers. She had a lot of good music, pop songs, country songs, love songs, and she will be missed. And I'm sure that there's a lot of people getting out their CDs of Olivia and listening to them this weekend and remembering the days when that stuff was brand new. I was thinking about The Seekers recently because there's a song they did that has been filling up my head for a while. For those of you who are not familiar with them, this is taking you back to maybe 1964. There was kind of a folk song revival, and the Seekers had Judith Durham as a lead vocal and about three other guys playing non-electric instruments, and they had quite a few hit songs, including the theme from the movie Georgie Girl, but many other songs, as well as a few cover versions of some popular tunes at the time. The nice thing about the Seekers was they were not exploitive. They didn't wear stupid, funny costumes. There was no drug suggestion stuff in what they wrote. You know, like the Amboy Dukes were doing a lyric I'll never forget from back then. Mary, do you wanna come and sit with me and watch the sun go down? Mary wanna. Yes, I wanna. Oh, gee, I wonder what they were talking about. They had no angry, quasi-political lyrics, no suggestive lyrics, and no silly psychedelic songs with great titles like The Jelly Jungle of Orange Marmalade. I'm not making, you don't believe me, do you? The Jelly Jungle of Orange Marmalade by the Lemon Pipers. Well, here, just give me 3 seconds. I don't know about you, but that kicks in my gag reflex. I kind of think they did that one tongue-in-cheek, kind of like the song Judy in Disguise by John Fred and his Playboy band, another one to look up on YouTube. But getting once again back to Planet Earth, Eric was talking about the chaplain and the story about holding two balls, one glass ball, one crystal ball, and one rubber ball, and that the rubber ball were things like work, or perhaps investments, or things like that, things that can go sour, but they bounce back. You can bounce back from it. The crystal, the glass ball that you don't want to drop is your family, your marriage, and your faith. things that if you break it, if you drop it, very, very hard to recollect it and put it back together again. A great idea, and it fit in so well because I was already thinking about putting on a song from the Seekers, and the one I want to put on is called I Know I'll Never Find Another You. It's all about stopping and appreciating the one you love. Let me read you the lyrics. There's a new world somewhere they call the Promised Land, and I'll be there someday if you could hold my hand. I still need you there beside me no matter what I do, for I know I'll never find another you. There's always someone for each of us, they say, and you'll be my someone forever and a day. I could search the whole world over until my life is through, but I know I'll never find another you. It's a long, long journey, so stay by my side. When I walk through the storm, you'll be my guide. If they gave me a fortune, my pleasure would be small. I could lose it all tomorrow and never mind at all. But if I should lose your love, dear, I don't know what I'd do. For I know I'll never find another you. Boy, those are just fantastic lyrics. Now, guys, just a word to the wise. Do not try to copy these down and put them into a card for your anniversary to your wife. She probably has heard the song. The original recording was done in 1964, and again, because they were not using electric guitars and things like that, it holds up extremely well. But the version I'm going to play for you was done from their final tour, done in 2013. That's a pretty good stretch for an Australian group to go from 1964 to 2013. And by the way, for you music trivia fans, the song was actually written by a British folk singing composer named Tom Springfield, who happened to have a sister who did pretty well too. Her name was Dusty Springfield. Generally speaking, the song has always been sung by female vocalists, although one male vocalist, Sonny James, sang it back in 1969 with kind of a country western feeling to it, with four male vocalists kind of humming behind him. It's very interesting that with the death of Judith Durham, the lead singer of the Seekers, at the age of 79, social media has picked up on her. People have been looking at her songs and her singing. There are these videos on YouTube of people listening to her song, to the Seekers singing I Know I'll Never Find Another You for the first time and reacting to it. And these are people who were not even ever born long, long after 1964. And many of them are very urban, you know, types listening to lots of hip hop and lots of hard rock. And some of them literally hearing for the first time the absolute purity and innocence and sincerity of the song began tearing up. It seems like beauty, innocence, and purity prevail across the decades and across the generations. So let's listen to the Seekers as we head out. My name is Jack Socia. I will catch you next week right here on Connecting the Diocese. And thank you so, so much for listening.
Search the whole world. your love.